You're listening to the Language Assistance Podcast, brought to you by the British Council. For more information about the British Council or the Language Assistance Programme, please visit britishcouncil.org. Hey, it's Bethan in London. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Language Assistance Podcast. So in this episode, we're going to be talking about all things insurance. Now, for some of you, it might not initially seem like the most thrilling of topics. However, it is something that all language assistants, wherever they go in the world, do need to get. Now, as I'm not an insurance broker, and while my knowledge about the subject is pretty limited, I decided to catch up with two different people who have two very different experiences and knowledge when it comes to all things insurance. So first, I spoke to Mel Hutton, and she is the British Council's head of insurance. And she provides great advice on the types of insurance that you'll need to get, as well as tips on what any policy should include and why. I also caught up with former language assistant Rob Cook. Now, Rob is probably one of the most positive people I've ever come across. So unfortunately, whilst working as a language assistant in Spain, he was involved in an extremely serious car crash, and he'll talk a little bit more about that and the injuries that he had in his segment. But he talks about the accident and why taking out insurance that's suitable is so important. And despite the terrible accident, he talks about how the programme has had positive impacts on his life. Now, this is a really interesting and important episode, so I'd really encourage you to listen to both sections. But for now, that's enough for me, and I really hope you enjoy this episode and find it useful. Hi Mel, thank you so much for joining the Language Assistance Podcast. It's lovely to talk to you.
Hi, thanks for having me. Really pleased to be here.
So as you know, this episode is going to focus on insurance, and I thought in the British Council, who better to ask than yourself?
Well, thank you very much. I do love to talk about insurance any opportunity I get, so that's absolutely brilliant. I'm really pleased to be involved.
So for the purpose of the listeners, did you want to just talk a little bit about what your current role is, your experience, and maybe why I've picked you to join us today?
Yeah, sure. So I'm the head of insurance at the British Council, and I've been doing that for about 4 years. And before that, I was working in the risk team. But before that, I was working in our overseas teaching centres, and I did that for about 15 years. So I actually started my career as an English language teacher, and I lived in like 9 different countries, and then eventually, sort of looking for a bit of a career change, came back to do this in the UK. So, you know, my focus in risk and in insurance is all based on my own experiences and my understanding of what it's like for teachers and language assistants and people who are working overseas.
Yeah, and insurance is such an important topic, and it's something that our programmes stress a lot. You'll see it in all our country notes, our information packs. But I know recently we've had quite a lot of queries from people asking what they need in terms of insurance, what they need to have in their policy. So some of our assistants get insurance provided through their school. However, it's usually very, very basic. So as a blanket approach, we really encourage everyone to take out their own insurance. But what kind of insurance do you think assistants need?
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with that. I think you're definitely better off having your own policy because you're in charge of it. And you know, if you need to make a claim, you make the claim. But I would definitely advise travel insurance. But it needs to be a policy that's designed for a working gap year. So normal travel insurance for a holiday is designed for just that. It's not designed for something that might happen in the workplace, and it's not designed for a trip that's really any length of time. So I think the thing to do is to do some internet searching for working gap year travel insurance. That's where I would start. And there are quite a few different providers, so there are definitely different possibilities, and you can even get one if you're already abroad. You know, that's not a problem if you haven't thought about it before you got there. It's not too late, but I really wouldn't travel without it if it was me.
And when people are obtaining their insurance, are there any particular things they need to make sure their insurance includes?
Yeah, definitely. So the main thing is medical treatment. So cover for the costs of medical treatment, because they can be astronomical. They can be really high in a lot of countries. Very few countries have free medical treatment. And even if they do, you might not be eligible for that medical treatment because you're not from that country. So medical treatment is really important. And some countries won't even treat you unless you've got some sort of proof that you can pay. So medical treatment's number one. You should also include medical evacuation. So if you need to come home in an ambulance, or if you need to be flown home with special assistance, that's really important. It's really expensive if you just have to pay for it. So make sure your insurance has that. And you need to get repatriation of remains. So, you know, if the worst did happen and you died while you were overseas, and, you know, we can assume that that's not going to happen, obviously, but if it did, then the last thing you want is for your family to have to make loads and loads of arrangements. And so repatriation of remains means that your insurer will make all of the arrangements and really just let your family in peace. Other things that you need cover for the stuff that you take with you. So your possessions, whether they get lost or stolen or damaged. And you need cover for your documents, like your passport and your credit cards and your cash. And you also should get cover for legal expenses, I think, just in case, heaven forbid, you did get arrested. You need to get some legal support, so you need cover for that. And again, all of these things are highly unlikely, but that's the point of insurance. It's for the things that are really unlikely, but if they did happen, you wouldn't be able to manage the situation on your own, or you wouldn't be able to afford to manage it on your own. And with that in mind, I think the last thing that I would always look for in travel insurance is an emergency helpline, just to make sure that, you know, if you're in need, if you've broken your leg, you can ring up and say, look, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to call an ambulance. I don't know where to go. I don't know. I haven't got a credit card, so I don't know if I can pay. And your insurers can often make a lot of arrangements for you or give you really good advice on what to do.
That's really useful advice. And I know a lot of our participants might be students and graduates. They might be quite young, fit and healthy at the moment, but you can't predict the events that can happen. And often it's events that happen out of your control that are unexpected. I suppose for our language assistants, I always just stress to them, you need to get insurance, but thinking in the mind that if something was to happen, what would you want to happen in that instance? And I know for my family, my parents both work in the NHS, so they're quite hot on insurance and things like that, because they're on the other end of seeing it happen when people visit the UK and things go wrong. And one thing they really wanted me to put in my insurance was that the insurance would cover for them to travel out to the host country if I was to be sick. So for example, if I was to get really, really sick and end up in a Spanish hospital when I was an assistant in Spain, my insurance would actually cover for a member of my family to come out. And I just think for me, if I was in that situation, I just want my mum or dad there. So there's other little things that people can have a look in their insurance and just think about what would they want to happen if something bad that they didn't expect occurred.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And we do, you know, it all feels a bit doom and gloom to think about these sort of terrible situations. But insurance can also help you even if it's not that bad. So, for example, I lost my passport when I was living in Thailand, and it cost me every penny I had to get myself to Bangkok to stay there for like 3 or 4 days and get this emergency passport and then go and get my visa stamps and all that. It cost everything I had, completely wiped out any money that I had to take home with me. And so it's things like that as well. So yeah, you know, it's big things and little things, but I think that point about family coming out to visit is a really good one, actually, because there are definitely circumstances in which somebody coming and perhaps helping you home would be really useful. So yeah, that's something I'd be looking for. And I think the other thing is you need to be honest with your travel insurers. You need to think about your own medical history and what's important to you. So, you know, it might be important that you're able to access a diabetic nurse, for example. And so in that, you know, circumstance, you need to make sure that pre-existing conditions are covered. And so you have to declare anything that is pre-existing in terms of a disability or medical condition or medical history. So do be honest with your insurers.
And I know another thing that you've told us that is really important, and you always stress to us to make sure we impart this knowledge to our assistants, is that if they travel to another country whilst abroad, so a lot of our assistants benefit from travelling maybe around South America in their holidays, they must make sure that they have insurance that covers each and every country that they visit during their trip. Do you have any advice on insurance for those circumstances?
So that could generally be included in the cover. I mean, if you're going away, say, for 8 months on a working gap year, then chances are you're going to get one policy for that whole period. And it could be a regional policy. So say if you're going to Southeast Asia and you know you're going to travel in Asia, then get a policy that covers the region. Or you could get a worldwide policy. So typically policies go by region, or they are worldwide excluding the USA and Canada, or worldwide including the USA and Canada. And that's just because of its price differences. So I would have a think about that, and I would try and include that in your overall policy rather than perhaps getting separate policies for different trips. I think you're probably better off getting one single policy.
And talking about Canada, particularly for our lucky assistants that go to places like Canada, there's often opportunities for them to take part in activities that they might not have done before, for example, like skiing or snowboarding or water sports. I know that's something that is important for our assistants to cover, isn't it?
It is, yeah. You've got to have a think about what you're going to be doing. So insurance policies try and exclude what they might call more slightly more dangerous sports. So things like skiing are often excluded from standard policies, partly because there's a slightly more risk of you hurting yourself, partly because you've got more expensive stuff with you specific for skiing. So yeah, if you're going to do any extreme sports, then it's worth making sure that they're covered. So reading through the terms and conditions as you're getting the quote, making sure that you tick the things that you need to tick, including sports, it's very important, because then you've got the right policy. Otherwise, there's no point having it. If it doesn't cover the things you need it to cover, it's pointless. And the other thing, I think, the other main reason that we see insurance policies become pointless is if somebody can't find their details when they need them. So print a copy, email yourself a copy, email your family a copy. If you're traveling with other people, email each other copies of your policies, just so that if you need your policy number or your insurer's contact number, either for yourself or for somebody else that's traveling with you, everyone knows where they are. And that just means that even if, you know, you banged your head and you were unconscious and your friend needed to sort out an ambulance and a bit of hospital treatment, they'd be able to tell your insurers, and your insurers can just pay for it. And that really reduces the stress in that sort of situation.
That's really good advice. And I suppose as well that applies to the passport, is that people, if their passport is somewhere safe at home, it's useful for their housemates or their school to know where to find the passport in those circumstances.
And again, on the passport, I would email myself a scan of my photo page.
That's been a really useful discussion. Is there any other last tips in terms of the insurance that people need to get?
The only other thing that I would recommend is, you know, make sure you know what to do, the basics of what to do in an emergency. So make sure you know how to call an ambulance or where the hospital is. And similarly, as we just said, make sure you know where your insurance details are, just so that if you need to get that sort of assistance, you know how to do it and you don't have to stress about finding those sorts of things out. So I would keep all of that information together. But other than that, get your insurance, make sure you know where it is, tuck it away and have a brilliant time.
Perfect. And one just last thing that we keep getting asked about at the moment, and it's a very hotly discussed topic, is the importance of EHIC cards. So for people that don't know what they are, they're the European Health Insurance cards. Now, our assistants go out in September time. Obviously, we don't know what's going to happen in terms of the UK leaving the EU. Do you think, because we are still a member, it's important that people do take their EHICs with them, or if they haven't got one, apply for one?
But yeah, definitely. I've spoken with our insurers quite a lot about this. It's been a really hot topic in the world of insurance. And at the moment, there are no plans for any European nation to withdraw EHIC cover from any other European nation. So even if we do leave, in whatever circumstances we leave, EHICs will still be valid until we're told otherwise. Now, eventually, EHICs may not be valid for UK nationals travelling into Europe or European nationals travelling into the UK. When that happens, insurance will probably become a bit more expensive because of the need for the medical costs cover. But in the meantime, if you're eligible for an EHIC, definitely get an EHIC and take it with you.
But that's been some really useful, solid advice for people to kind of go for a checklist. And we have actually got a checklist in our country information packs, which has been prepared by Belle and her team. So every single person that's going through the British Council programme will have that in their country pack. And I'd really encourage you to go through it when you are looking for policies and just make sure that your policy ticks all those boxes, and then think about what you might want additionally on top of that advice, because that is just general advice that we think everyone should have. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us, Mel. It's been really lovely to talk to you, and I'm sure that our listeners will find this really, really useful.
Well, thanks very much for having me. I really appreciate it, and I hope everyone has a brilliant experience overseas.
Hey, Rob, how are you?
Great, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Thank you for joining us on the podcast today. Now, I don't know if you know this, the first time I kind of heard your name was under quite a stressful situation. But I was actually really, really new in my job. I think I'd only been in the role a couple of months. I was sat in London, new to London, eating brunch with my friends on a Sunday. And suddenly I got a call directly to my mobile. And basically the call was saying, one of your language assistants has been in a major car crash. We need you to provide us with information. So that was the first time I heard about you. So you can imagine getting that call. I was just like, oh my gosh, what has happened? As far as that was kind of the start of how I got involved in the story. But I thought you'd probably be the best person to explain what actually happened.
Okay, so yeah, when you got that call, I imagine it would probably been the day after the crash happened, which means I probably would have been in a coma at that time still.
Yeah, and for the audience, you should probably say that you were an assistant in Spain, weren't you?
Yes, I was a language assistant in Spain. It was my first year, and this accident took place four months after I arrived, so just approaching sort of the midpoint of the assistantship, I guess.
Yeah, and where were you placed?
I was placed in a city called Badajoz in Spain. Again, not many people will have heard of that. It is a city, very small city, right next to the border of Portugal in the region of Extremadura. So it was a sort of a more rural placement, even though it was a city.
And you were enjoying your placement at the time?
Loved it. And I will highlight, before I continue to talk about what may come across as quite some strong details, that I continue to love my placement. I even renewed and did a second year in a different city in Seville, but I did a second year from loving it so much. So me and a couple of other language assistants, my friends, we decided to go sort of for a day trip to a nearby town called Zafra, which was only 45 minutes away. And as I previously mentioned, being in quite a rural region, buses and public transport trains is pretty non-existent. So you're going to want to use a lot of the BlaBlaCar, which I'd used a few times beforehand and had no issues. I will stress now to take care with it, even though I advise to use it, take care with it, because we decided to catch a BlaBlaCar back home. And to be honest, from that point on, I don't really remember much, and I still don't. We obviously got in the car, and apparently, according to the police report, 20 minutes after, our driver decided to try and overtake on a single track road, and we went straight into another car at 86 miles an hour. And that's essentially how the accident happened.
Now, I actually got sent a picture from the press. Well, it was a press picture, but actually from the local authorities. It looked horrific.
Yes, yeah. It's one of those things that you never ever think will happen to you, and you look at the photos, and I still to this day don't believe it really happened to me. It's very sort of I guess maybe the brain distances itself from it to protect yourself sort of thing.
So I assume that you and the other language assistants got taken directly to hospital?
Yes, I passed out in the accident, lost consciousness, and even though I don't remember this, I did come to, and in the ambulance I was speaking, I was talking. My two friends with me, one of them was in a coma and remained in a coma for another 3.5 months, and my other friend, who had, I say lesser, still very, very big injuries, but less injuries, she didn't lose consciousness in the crash at all. We went directly to hospital, and it was at hospital that they discovered that I had internal injuries and I had internal bleeding. And that's when they had to rush me into surgery. I was in there for 3.5-4 hours where they removed parts of my intestine, my spleen, and they had to stitch other organs. And then they put me into a medically induced coma. And that was the sort of the beginning, the beginning of the process.
So when I went back to work on the Monday, obviously I'd been in touch with various people on the Sunday. But when I went back on the Monday, I got a report from the authorities in Spain. It was just basic report of the injuries that you'd had.
Yeah.
And it was all in Spanish. And sitting through and translating that, I had to get a dictionary out. I was absolutely shocked. I couldn't believe like the extent of the injuries.
It was a long list. 11 broken bones and all the internal injuries, punctured lung, the sort of the light memory loss, sort of brain damage, I guess it comes under. It just keeps going on, the list of injuries. Yeah, it was definitely an experience.
Did you have insurance?
I did. I luckily, absolutely thankful now that I did think to take out insurance, and I thought to take it out based on an email I got from the British Council before my citizenship started. And possibly the best advice I could receive. So I did have insurance, and I want to really stress that point to every single person who's maybe going into this programme. Because I am that person who thought, it won't happen to me, probably won't happen to me. I mean, come on, what are the chances? And I'm still that person that kind of believes that even life is experience, you know? I think that's just a human thing. But best to be safe. That money is well worth it to put towards an insurance policy. Well worth it.
At what point did you have to start engaging with the insurance provider?
So this is where our first bit of advice comes in. Choose your next of kin wisely on the insurance document when you do it. Because they, in my situation... My mother was the person who had to begin talking to insurance because I was incapable of doing so. But we started, or my mum started contacting them in 2 days after the accident when she had come out to Spain. And directly from there, she was the one that had most of the contact whilst I was in no sort of state.
And what was the experience like for your mum? Did the insurance have a 24-hour helpline? Did they support her through the process?
They did, as in, I think this is a normal thing with insurance. They did their sort of the bare minimum. I can't talk about different insurance programs because we're only experienced with this one. They were there to help and they were always there 24 hours a day, but they were reluctant to sort of pay out for what was necessary or to cover this or to cover that. In the end, they did cover my repatriation, which went up to about
£9,500. Wow, £9,500.
Yeah. So if I didn't have insurance, that bill would have been mine, my parents, my family's bill to cover.
Which is a significant amount of money. And was that repatriation by ambulance or flight home, or how did they?
Because of the surgery I had and my punctured lung, I could not fly. So it was they had to drive an ambulance from the UK to Spain over 2.5 days and then pick me up and drive straight back. So about a 5 day with trained nurses on board and all the petrol, the insurance. About £9,500 they billed that too.
Yeah, so I was talking yesterday to a colleague of mine, Mel, who works in the insurance team, which is head of insurance, and that was what she was stressing is, I think we're so lucky in the UK that we have the NHS that we don't always appreciate how expensive medical care is. And yeah. I think with accidents like that, it has the potential for it to snowball, like the cost, I assume, just went up and up and up.
Yeah, it's one of those things you never expect. When they told me 9,500, I thought it was a bit of a joke really, but after research it does make sense. The costs they costed out, it made sense. Everything adds up so fast, and obviously it's three people that came out to help me, two drivers that had to swap shifts every 6 hours and a nurse, and so that's three people's salaries you're paying at the same time as well.
We have assistants every year that go to places like Latin America, Canada, where medical costs could be extortionate. So I think people, if they really need to appreciate how much little accidents can have. Just out of interest, did your insurance have legal cover?
Yeah, it did. It did have legal cover. I can't remember the figure off the top of my head. I managed to pay, or I decided to pay for quite a good insurance policy. I can't think of the figure off the top of my head, but it did have legal cover, yeah.
And have you had to utilise that now?
it's a process that's still ongoing at this point, where I'm still involved with insurance. I'm still involved with sort of the legal side of things. The court case is only just beginning now. Just to put into picture how much this sort of can affect your life. Court case will probably take a year to 2 years, and it's only just beginning now. And we're a year and 4 or 5 months after the accident. So it is a long process. But I will say that the legal cover probably will have to be utilised at certain points. Yeah, I will probably use it.
So Mel, our colleague yesterday, she stressed the importance of making sure that that's one of the things you include in your policies, making sure you've got legal cover. Because you don't know, even if you ended up being at fault. So, and we've all seen the case in London where someone stepped out with their mobile phone and a cyclist hit them, and they both ended up in a legal court case. So I think that's another important thing. So reflecting on your experiences, I think we can both agree the importance of insurance. But how are you doing now?
I'm doing, to be as positive as I can, I'm doing fantastic, actually. I've now come back to the UK after doing my second year as assistant. I've managed to land a job as a Spanish teacher, or a trainee Spanish teacher in my PGC programme. So using the skills I gained directly from sort of the British Council Spanish Assistant Programme. With regards to the sort of the medical crash issues, when I'd like to say that once you break your spine, it doesn't ever really go away. Daily issues with that, and I've lost sort of quite a lot of mobility in my dominant wrist. I'm right-handed, and that's gone. But that's the negative side. I like to focus on the sort of the things that surround it.
Well, I always remember that the first email I think you must have sent once you kind of were in like a medical state where you were able to, like, you're feeling better and you're able to email. I vividly remember that you said, I think the line was, the only annoying thing about the crash is that I can't continue working in Badajoz.
Yeah, I remember saying that. It annoyed me. So I got, everyone was sort of, aren't you angry about, you know, that it wasn't your fault and this has happened to you? And I was like, that's just life. You know, those things happen. But I was more angry about the fact that I only had 8-9 months in this program, and I was absolutely loving the experience. And I was mad I couldn't be with the kids in my classes, the teachers I had friends with, my Spanish friends, even my other assistant friends. I was just super mad that sort of time had been taken from me, which is why I wanted to do a second year. And I would have done a third probably if I had the chance.
So good to hear. Now, we're going to get you involved in some of our future podcasts. I think being in a language assistant for 2 years, also you had quite a unique experience being someone maybe a bit more rural. We're going to get you on board for some future episodes if you have the time amongst your PGC studying and working. But do you have any kind of final bits of advice or things that you want to share about your placement for our listeners?
Yeah, the one thing, based on the, obviously on the nature of the podcast being around insurance, I'd like to just say that when you're looking for them, and even at this point, I still am tempted, but I don't fall for it. It's always very tempting to go for the cheapest and think that'll cover me. It's got what it needs. But I would, based on sort of what the experts say in the other part of this podcast, definitely take on board the advice, because you never know what happened to you. And it is, I have to talk to my mother, who is still stressed about the experience talking insurance. It is worth it to get a good policy and pay that money, because you don't know how much you might save, and you don't know how much you might change your future depending on what happens. Hopefully nothing, but you know, that's what I hoped and it did. So I would advise really taking a day out to read to sort of policy well, make sure you are covered in the event of something happening.
That's really, really good advice. And just before you go, do you have any favourite moments of your time living in Spain as an assistant?
I'm going to say something quite sappy a bit. I met my now partner out there in Badajoz 2 days before the crash happened. I organised a sort of intercambio, as I say in Spanish, like a language exchange meetup whilst I was there. And about 20, 25 people came, and she was one of them. And I think my favourite moment of the year, I'd probably get hit if I didn't say this, was that night where I met her, and then she was a part of my recovery process as I met her 2 days before the crash. And now she's come back to the UK with me, she's moved here with me, and I'd say that has to be my favourite, of the fact that the assistant programme isn't just going for, you know, employability skills, a good experience, but it really, really can, and in my case, has changed my life completely.
Oh, wow, it's such a lovely thing. I didn't even know that coming on the podcast. She must have thought, did you not think that you'd ghosted her or something? I assume that you didn't went in contact.
Yeah, it was definitely the good thing about being from a sort of a rural, small city, only about 100,000 people in the city, is that you become famous for being sort of like the English speaker. There was a little, 17 of us actually, 17 of us in total there. And we're the only foreign people there. And so it was huge news in the city. And so she did know. And obviously I started up a WhatsApp group for the language exchange group. And it was put in there on the night of the crash that there had been an accident with the three of us in the group. So she did know. Luckily, she didn't think I was ghosting her or anything.
Oh, that's good to hear. Well, it's been lovely to chat to you. And I'm sure we'll have you on a future episode as well. But in the meantime, it's good to hear that you're on the mend. And I wish you all the best for your PGCE.
Thank you very much. And thanks for having me on the podcast. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Language Assistance Podcast, brought to you by the British Council. This episode has been recorded and edited by the Language Assistance team. For more information about the British Council or the Language Assistance Programme, please visit britishcouncil.org. Or why not follow the Language Assistance team on Twitter? Our Twitter handle is @LanguageASST.